clerk will call the docket.
Michelle Dillon Yoder, against the Commonwealth of Virginia, Erica Henry Anderson, Assistant Public Defender, Barbara Merrick, Attorney General, Robert A. Anderson III, Senior Assistant Attorney General, the Appellate.
You may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. My name is Eric Anderson for Ms. Yoder. It's my hope to reserve about 5 minutes at the end for rebuttal. The Commonwealth's case tends to rise and fall on two things in this case. The first is page 67 of the appendix, the conviction order from 2014, which on its face does not reflect any additional suspension. The trial court there did not notify Ms. Yoder of any deprivation of her license. It's a Virginia uniform summons in the bottom left-hand corner where the judge is filling in the disposition. There is a box that he can check to say your license is suspended, to notify someone that their license is suspended. And that, in this particular case and in the other prior and before the court, that was not done. The
judge's order says she was convicted while driving with a revoked license.
Yes, Your Honor.
And it was revoked at the time she was stopped in this case, was it not?
Yes, Your Honor.
So what changed in between to suggest that she was not revoked?
Your Honor, the revocation that was effective on the date that she was driving for the 2014 conviction could not have persisted. There was the my position derives from Barden v. Commonwealth, where Mr. Barden was driving. His DMV transcript said he was suspended, but all of the suspensions that were listed on his transcript had lapsed. Likewise, in this case, the revocation that was effective at the time of the driving that gave rise to the 2014 conviction, based on the record before us, did not necessarily persist. There is nothing to show that
revocation. In the other case, the Barden case, the evidence was the suspension had lapsed, and in this case there's no evidence at all the revocation had lapsed, and these cases are similar in your mind?
There is a similarity, Your Honor. I think there's also a distinction that Your Honor has indicated, but I do think that to show that she had notice of an existing revocation is important, and I don't think the evidence shows that she had notice of a revocation that continued at the time that she was driving.
So did the last three trial judges who found her guilty, having pled guilty to driving under a revoked license, did they have to call her up the day of the offense and say, you're still revoked, you know that, right?
No, Your Honor. The DMV, in theory, will issue the revocation as the code requires and will then send notice. It will show up on her DMV transcript, which Commonwealth's almost universally in cases like this introduce at trial, and why that didn't happen in this case is beyond me. And the Commonwealth would like us to draw the conclusion from these convictions and from the fact that she handed over some ID that is not a driver's license, that proves notice not only that she didn't have the privilege to drive, but that she had notice particularly that her license was revoked.
The DMV transcript would only record that she received notice. She received notice because she was in front of the court and she pled guilty to driving on a revoked license. She was found guilty of driving. What more notice did she need?
The revocation that was effective at the time of the driving is one that was issued by the DMV after she pled guilty and was convicted. And so
it was after she pled guilty and was convicted? How could she be convicted if she wasn't revoked already?
So the revocation that was effective at the time that she was driving in the instant offense, the only revocation that the record reflects that was effective at that time is the one that came from the DMV as a result of the 2014 conviction. And so my position is that notice with respect to the other revocations that could not have persisted, or the record does not support their persistence to the time of the instant offense.
But why doesn't it?
Because the revocations that were shown stem from a first offense DUI, which gives rise to a one-year revocation, and from the previous
conviction. You talk about, okay, great, I'm sorry.
And so she had noticed that she had previously been revoked. The question is whether that notice is sufficient to notify her that the revocation continued past the expiration of that revocation.
Don't you think there's a difference between a revocation and a suspension?
The code certainly uses different words for them. I think there is absolutely a difference, but I think that the case law tends to treat the two of them in parallel.
But they're substantively different, are they not?
Yes, Your Honor.
A suspension, when a suspension period ends, it can, you still have your license, correct?
Typically, the DMV requires you to pay a reinstatement fee before you get your license
back. You still have your license. You have to reinstate your license. When a revocation occurs, you have to apply for a new license, do you not? Is that not the substantive difference?
I think that is the procedural difference, yes.
Okay, so her license was revoked. There's no evidence that she took the affirmative action.
There is no evidence in the record to show that she affirmatively reinstated her license.
She was convicted of another offense where the statute itself indicates that there is a 3-year revocation period, does it not? It's not discretionary with the judge, is it?
No, it's done by the DMV afterwards.
Okay.
Upon their receipt.
But the statute requires a 3-year revocation.
Yes, Your Honor.
And she knew that she was in court, and she knew what statute she was charged with and convicted of. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
And then this subsequent case arose less than 3 years later.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
The Commonwealth also relies on the inference from the Court of Appeals that the ID card that Ms. Yoder handed over was issued under 462.345 to then conclude that that must connect the notice. And 462.345 requires a minimum $10 fee to get the state-issued ID. And it's a 2-year fee per year, so it is possible that that ID dates back 4.5 years before the instant offense. And again, so I don't think that that ties directly to a linkage. And it's also only an inference rather than a demonstrated fact that it was the state ID rather than a university-issued ID, a work ID. There are hundreds of pieces of plastic with people's photographs on them that aren't the ones issued under 462.345. But it seems like, unless there are additional questions, I'll reserve the balance of my time to respond.
All right.
Thank you.
Good morning, may it please the court. Robert Anderson for the Commonwealth. It might be just useful just to mention two or three statutes at the outset, some of which have been alluded to. First, under Section 18.2-272, if you have 3 convictions under that statute within a 10-year period, it becomes a Class 6 felony. There is no dispute on brief that the 2010 and 2014 convictions were the 2 requisite convictions in order to receive a Class 6 felony conviction, such as what happened here. I will note that in the Court of Appeals, the defendant did challenge the 2014 conviction as not qualifying. The Court of Appeals rejected that, but that argument's been abandoned. So the starting point is you have 2 convictions, 2010, 2014, under 18.2-272. They're qualifying convictions, and now we have this conviction renders it a Class 6 felony. Next. So we have revocations all the way along, and I think Justice Mims referred to this, 462.391A. If you are convicted of 2 of these offenses within the 10-year period, then there is a mandatory 3-year revocation. The defendant has asserted several times on brief, and I think it is flatly wrong under operation of state law that the revocation had expired, or we don't know when the revocation, how long it was in effect. I think this statute unambiguously demonstrates to the contrary. If you have a second revocation order, such as the one in 2014, your license is revoked for 3 years, period. And in this case, the current operation of the vehicle occurred June 2016, which is about 9 months before the 3 years runs. Also, 462-345, I think, is very instructive in terms, particularly in terms of the issue of whether there was actual notice by this defendant that she could not lawfully operate the vehicle in June of 2016. And by the way, counsel today suggests that there are all sorts of IDs, university IDs, etc. We don't know that that the card here referred to 462-345. I would just point out that the Court of Appeals said that that was a reasonable inference, a trier could fact, and his brief in this court is devoid of the slightest argument to attack that conclusion by the Court of Appeals. I also note that his brief in this court on, I think, four separate occasions refers to it as a state ID card. Now, there are probably four subsections in 462-345 worthy of brief mention. Subsection A says the department shall issue a special identification card to the person provided that, in part, the appellant does not, applicant does not hold a driver's license. Subsection D, special identification card issued under this section may be similar in size, shape, and design to a driver's license, and then I'll skip some, but the card shall be readily distinguishable from a driver's license and shall clearly state that it does not authorize the person to whom it is issued to drive a motor vehicle. Subsection F, such cards shall clearly indicate that it does not authorize the person to whom it is issued to drive a motor vehicle. Subsection G, unless otherwise prohibited by law, a valid Virginia driver's license shall be surrendered upon application for a special identification card. So the salient facts are when the defendant provided this ID card in lieu of a driver's license, and again, the Court of Appeals has made an unchallenged conclusion that a reasonable inference was it referred to 462-345, there are two sort of complementary principles. One, you couldn't have the ID card unless you didn't have a driver's license. And two, in order to get the card, you had to surrender your driver's license. So when this defendant chose in 2016 to operate the vehicle, she knew from her possession of the card that she didn't have a driver's license, and she knew from that, as well as having been convicted and being present in court in both 2010 and 2014, that the license had been revoked and she couldn't lawfully drive.
Mr. Anderson, is it, setting aside a moment the license or the ID that she had, is it the Commonwealth's position that just by virtue of having been convicted of the prior driving on revocation that she was on actual notice of the revocation?
I would say so, although I would not limit it to that. I think she was in court both in according to the face of the two conviction orders from 2010-2014. She was present in court. She pled guilty. She was guilty as found guilty as charged. And the statute cited in both of those orders is 182-272. So I would submit that she was well aware of the fact she'd been revoked. And in fact, in the 2014...
And your argument is that it is by virtue of the conviction under 272 that she was...
Well, that would certainly, Your Honor, that would certainly be an argument of mine. It would certainly not be my only argument. I would also point out that because we have much above and beyond that, I don't think the court really has to decide whether the 2000... Although I understood counsel today in his argument to say, yeah, that the she knew from the court proceedings that she'd been revoked and she couldn't drive. But I would also point out the 2014 conviction resulted in a 90-day jail sentence. She had to serve 10. The other 80 were suspended. So she had a pretty concrete idea that this was not something the equivalent of speeding. I mean,
the revocation under the statute is an administrative revocation by DMV. Is that correct?
Well, DMV, I mean, it's done pursuant to state law, and...
So it's different from other statutes where the court, in its discretion, may suspend or not, and so the court from the bench would pronounce, under other statutes, your license is hereby suspended for whatever period of time it decides to do so.
Well, I'm not entirely sure of the focus of Your Honor's question. I would simply say that once you have a conviction under, once you have a conviction under 18272, and she had two of them, then under operation of state law, your license is revoked for the following 3 years. There's no
I'm not questioning that. I'm only focusing. My focus is really on the word actual. And so I'm trying to determine if the Commonwealth's position is, because the statute says that it will be revoked for 3 years, is that the actual notice that the statute
I think you can't divorce that from the ID card she had under Section 462.345. Again, for the reasons I've advanced, she plainly knew, in fact, she had actual notice, however you want to characterize it, she plainly knew on June 8, 2016, that she didn't currently have a license. And the reason she didn't have a license was because she had to surrender it, and she had an ID card which specifically said, this does not give you permission to drive a car. She knew at the time she could not lawfully drive a car, and I would say that that is sufficient as actual notice.
So, counsel, I think that's Justice Powell's asked an important question. Let's just for purposes of this question, accept your opposing counsel's argument that the record doesn't prove that this is a state DMV ID card. An administrative suspension under the habitual offender statute is done entirely by DMV. And as you know, you have to show that there was actual receipt of the notice from DMV. How is this statute different from a habitual offender administrative suspension?
Well, I'm not entirely sure how to answer that other than to point out that we have evidence, putting aside 345, we have evidence that the police officer at the scene, let's see if I can just 1 second. The police officer at the scene, using the identification card, determined that the driver, quote, came back as being revoked, DUI related. He then ran a driver's transcript.
So here's my point. Under a DMV administrative suspension, your record can show revoked or suspended, but there is no proof that you actually received the letter from DMV. Mm-hmm. Unless there is a return receipt that was indicated in the DMV computer.
Well,
this statute, that is a different statute than what we're dealing with. How does this statute differ from that?
My argument, Justice Mims, doesn't have anything to do with, does the evidence show that DMV on some date mailed out something to this defendant, and does it show that she received it? That is not my argument. I'm not making any argument along those lines. I'm saying that the question is whether she had actual notice at the time she operated the vehicle in 2016 that she could not lawfully operate the car. The Court of Appeals, in talking about the issue of actual notice, hopefully I can find it, just give me 1 second. Okay, this is page 20 of the appendix. Notice may also be proven by showing that the party had actual knowledge of the fact. They cite a case, Pitchford v. Commonwealth, a parenthetical, holding that the fact that the defendant learned in person from a deputy that his license was suspended established actual notice. And I had nothing to do with any kind of mailing from DMV or receipt of the mailing from DMV. That is not the argument I'm making here.
Does 18.2272 require actual notice? Similar to the habitual offender statute?
I think it is silent on that. It just basically has substantive provisions rather than anything procedural along those lines. Again, my argument totally distinct from any mailing of a notice from DMV, and whether there's proof of that, whether there's proof of receipt. My argument ultimately hinges on actual notice.
Did she, in 2014, when she was convicted of driving on a revoked license and pled guilty to it, Was her license revoked at the time she was standing in court?
When she came to court in 2014, it said that she, on its face, it says, drive unrevoked a license.
So it was revoked. She knew it was revoked. She was pled guilty to it being revoked. She was found guilty for it being revoked. It was revoked by operation of law for 3 years. Mm-hmm. And on the date of the offense here, she had a revoked license.
Right. It had been revoked. It continued to be revoked. It was revoked. It continued to be revoked 2 years and 3 months later when she was stopped in June of 2016. I submit that combined with her possession of the ID card, which is certainly an important part of the Commonwealth's overall argument, is sufficient to establish actual notice, irrespective of what the DMV might have done or could have done or should have done in terms of mailing out anything. I'll just point out a couple of things at the end. It's interesting, on cross-examination of the officer who was the only witness at the trial, the defense counsel says, did she tell you why she was driving? This is page 43. Any chance she said she was driving a friend to work? Then page 44. Did she tell you how far she'd been driving? If you're defending on the guilt aspect of the case, I don't understand why a defense attorney would ask those questions. I think it seems to be a tacit acknowledgement that, well, she shouldn't have driven, but they're extenuating circumstances. And it's interesting because the defendant before the court convicted her has had, in effect, an allocution, which, of course, normally is in before sentencing. But in any event, she says her piece as to the circumstances. And at page 49, she says, I drove 2 miles from my house, borrowing a vehicle, so I mean I wouldn't have been driving, but my friend had to get to work, or they were going to lose the job, and I took a chance, and I shouldn't have. I know it was a mistake, but I just drove 2 miles, a mile from my house and a mile back. So that ties in with those questions, which otherwise seem peculiar to ask in the guilt phase of the trial. I would also point out that the defendant, in fact, had, when there was a reference at page 41 to at the field determination from the transcript, came back, she had 3 previous convictions, that's at 41. At 61, it turned out, in fact, she did have 3 prior convictions under 18272. I see my time is up. I would ask the court to affirm for all of these reasons. Thank you.
Rebuttal.
Your Honors, counsel relies on language about notice that she did not have permission to drive. That language from Peters is dictum. I don't think it's compelling or binding on this court. I think that largely comes from cases dealing with driving on a suspended or revoked license under 462301. And in this case, to convict of a felony, 182272 being a more serious conviction than 462301, evidence of notice of lack of permission to drive generally isn't sufficient to give notice that she is driving revoked. I am willing to concede, as counsel indicated, that the 2014 revocation from that conviction would have lasted for 3 years, would have been effective at the time of the driving. But that's the only revocation that would have been effective at the time of the driving, and there is nothing to link notice affirmatively to that case.
So how many convictions?
For counsel, she was in court.
Yes, Your Honor.
She knew what, and we're replowing ground. She was in court. She knew what she was charged with. She knew what she was convicted of. Do we have to have proof that the judge actually opened the code book and read the statute to her? The 3-year revocation was mandatory.
It was. But the 3-year revocation was mandatory, was conducted and completed by an outside, you know, a third party not present in court that day, and I don't know that that's sufficient to establish notice. If Your Honor disagrees,
my point with opposing counsel was that there is a distinction between an administrative suspension under habitual offender, where DMV does everything, doesn't go to court, and this one where you actually know when you walk out of court that the sanction is a three-year revocation.
Based upon a guilty plea for driving on a revoked license.
If your counsel has done their job, absolutely. I don't know that that's sufficient as a matter of law to convict someone of a felony for driving while revoked.
Under the allocution for after a guilty plea, don't you have to? Does she not have to say, "I understand what I am charged with and what I am pleading guilty to"? I understand the sanction. I understand that we don't have a transcript in this instance.
And what exactly gets said in general district court in a crowded traffic docket is, I would say, briefer than one sees in the record of circuit court proceedings. And so I was not counsel with her on the prior. I don't know what was said in court that day.
Let me ask you this. There were two convictions that we have the orders from. There was testimony as to a third prior conviction. Is that right?
So there was discussion of a third. That discussion of the third, we talked about this at the Court of Appeals, comes from the pre-sentence investigation and report. It wasn't before the court at the time of the motion to strike.
I see.
Likewise, the Court of Appeals didn't account for, specifically set aside consideration of the statement of the defendant at trial when asked for comment by the judge, and nothing about that was cross-appealed by the Commonwealth, so I don't think that that's necessarily fair game before the court today. My primary point mentioning that the conclusion that the Court of Appeals drew that the ID handed over by Ms. Yoder was issued under 462.345 was that that was an inference that was drawn. I'm not saying it was an inference unfairly drawn, but you run into questions of attenuation when you pile an inference on top of an inference on top of an inference. Even if this one is strong, using it to find that the evidence is sufficient beyond a reasonable doubt to show that she knew that her license was revoked is a step I'm not sure that we should be prepared to take. But unless there are additional questions, I'll submit it to the court. Thank you, Your Honor.
Call the next case.